Hi, you're listening to Talking About Organizations. This is a joint summary of episodes 7 and 8, both on the functions of the executive by Chester Barnard. The discussion has been the longest one we've had to date, so the summary is going to be shortish in order to reflect and balance that fact. In truth, however, because there is so much to say about this book, to say anything other than the most basic stuff would be to say not enough. So if you haven't listened to either of the full episodes yet, and you find what I'm going to say interesting, it is probably worth your time to either read the book or listen to us talk about it over episodes 7 and 8. As always, these can be found on our website at www.talkingaboutorganizations.com. My name is Dimitris, summarizing from Birmingham in the UK. The Functions of the Executive by Chester Barnard is a vast and inclusive text that covers virtually all aspects of the organization, which is why we devoted two episodes to it. This is a really major book in management theory, so much so that it still forms the backbone of many advanced management courses today. Chester Barnard was an experienced executive at the turn of the last century, and this book arose from his dissatisfaction with the existing management theory of the day, namely traditional scientific management of Frederick Taylor and Henri Fayol, both of whom we covered in episodes 1 and 2 respectively. Our discussion on the functions of the executive largely followed the structure and chronology of the book. This summary, however, will proceed in an inverted fashion, beginning with what are, in fact, the functions of the executive and then cascading all the way down to an individual employee. So, first of all, what does it take to qualify as an executive? For Barnard, the most important thing is taking and keeping responsibility for organizational decisions. This is an important aspect of his theory because by saying that it is responsibility that makes one an executive, Barnard highlights the fact that formalities, such as titles, are not sufficient or completely necessary. Another key aspect of being an executive has to do with absorbing oneself fully into the personality of the organization. Barnard observed that all organizations have personality and that executives need to be able to feel it, identify their role in it, and be willing to become absorbed into it. We talked a bit about this and Ralph gave some excellent examples from his executive work experience. The main takeaway from this was that organizations seem to have localized cultures. Different units in different places may do somewhat different things, but they all share in one personality. The way how executives, according to Barnard, can take responsibility off and connect into organizational personality is through performing their function, hence the name of the book. The functions of the executives are, number one, to maintain a system of communication, number two, to set the purpose of the organization, and number three, to recruit suitable people. Importantly, what executives do is not actively organize their organization, but rather maintain the organization in its operation. The difference here is one of micromanaging, as in executives should not. So let's go into more detail on these three functions of the executive: maintaining system of communication, setting the purpose, and recruiting the right people. Barnard argues that organizations are basically systems of communication. So much comes from communication, including authority. Yes, that's right. For Barnard, authority is mainly communication, coupled with some ritual here and there. We spent quite a bit of time and vast majority of the first half of episode 8 discussing precisely this. There is just so much in there. For instance, Barnard writes that a person will accept communication as authoritative when the following four conditions are met. 1. That employee can and does understand the communication. 2. That employee believes the communication is not inconsistent with the purpose of the organization. 3. That it is also compatible with employee's personal interest in general. And 4. That employee is actually able to comply with the communication physically and mentally. Individuals do go through qualifying communication using these four categories, but not every time or in every circumstance. You may have heard this term, zone of indifference, which also comes from this part of the book. By zone of indifference, Barnard means that situation when an employee will accept commands as a given. However, if the effort required to follow an order is excessive relative to the outcome, or if it is physically impossible or simply nonsensical, an employee is well within the right to ignore, not even refuse, but outright ignore, such an order. This idea that authority is a product of communication seems quite obvious in that most of what people do is, well, communicate with each other, much like I'm communicating with you, albeit in a non-authoritative way. So building on that, Barnard highlights how crucial it is to communicate to your subordinates in a clear way and to make sure there are no gaps in the line of communication. Potential gaps can be anything from incompatible communication technology to unoccupied positions within the organizational structure. On a side note, if this is something you're interested in, do have a look at the work of Professor Paul Carlisle of Boston University on communication of knowledge across boundaries from 2002 and 2004. Anyway, back to Barnard. Another function is to set the purpose of the organization. This is expressed through efficiency and effectiveness of the organization, another famous set of terms right there. So effectiveness means how well an organization as a whole is achieving its goal, and efficiency means how rewarding it is for people to work in that organization. These slightly confusing definitions in mind, Barnard proposed that organizations can do just fine if they are ineffective, but will collapse if they are inefficient, thus placing utmost stress on employee satisfaction. What this means is that organizations can continuously fall short of their goal, but only as long as the people working there find satisfaction in their jobs. Another thing this means is that executives should avoid giving orders that cannot be made efficient. Ralph brought up a number of examples of when this principle was not followed, and so the orders of the executive resembled a wish list rather than a communication. This concept of purpose is interconnected with another important aspect of Barnard's book, namely faith. We discussed that faith is akin to the glue that holds the organization together. In a number of metaphor-rich paragraphs, Barnard emphasizes how belief in the organization, in the cooperation, and in the work is key to any organizational model that includes human individuals in any meaningful way. The final thing that executives do is identifying a suitable workforce. Most of the first part of the book, and of episode 7, handles this issue. There are two elements to selecting an appropriate workforce: remuneration and ability to do work. Before we get to the monetary bit, it is worthwhile pausing to consider what the ability to do work is all about. For Barnard, ability to do work has much to do with the body of the individual. He devotes most of part 1 of the book to describing how people are compound beings of the physical, the biological, and the social. What this amounts to, essentially, is that people have bodies which can, depending on the environment, do some things and not other things, and that they can co-opt other people to make things with them or for them. In addition to this, people always occupy some bit of time and space, so there cannot be more than one of Barnard writing this book in more than a single location at any given time. We discussed that while this slightly awkward approach to characterizing human beings is largely true, advances in communication technology and artificial intelligence may end up significantly distorting this spatio-temporal limitation. In terms of remuneration, Barnard goes into much detail about what forms of payment motivate employees and in which circumstances. Sufficient to say that he recognized that money has very limited motivating potential, especially when used on its own. So this wraps up the what are the functions of the executive bit: to maintain a system of communication, to select appropriate workforce, and to set, adjust, and maintain a reasonable organizational purpose. How might an executive go about doing that? Why, Barnard is glad you asked. An executive ought to go about his or her functions in a morally sound way, of course. Pretty much all of chapter 16 is devoted to outlining this very interesting idea. What being a morally upstanding executive means is far too complex to explain here, unfortunately. But I think it is fair to say that the difference between doing things right and doing the right thing applies very well. In summary of this brief summary, Barnard is a hugely significant author in that he provided the foundation for over 80 years of management thought. He understood that top-down management was a myth and that organizations cannot exist without people who are willing to cooperate. Our key takeaway was that if you had to pick the main function of the executive, it would be maintaining a system of communication. And of course not micromanaging. I hope you enjoyed this summary and that it enticed you to go and listen to the full episodes if you haven't yet. Summaries are still new, so we would appreciate if you could get in touch with us via our website, Twitter, Facebook or LinkedIn to let us know what you think and what can be improved. Next week, we are going to discuss a second book that came out of the famous Hawthorne studies by Elton Mayo and colleagues, The Social Problems of an Industrial Civilization, here on Talking About Organizations.